Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us.
Hi, Ashley. Hi, Hayley.
Hi, Erin.
Hello.
Hi, Hayley.
Hello.
How are you guys today?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I'm just getting my blanket around me, making myself nice and cozy.
That time of year. And it's dark here today. It feels like we're nearing December. It's morning, but it's still really dark. So like late morning and it's still really dark.
Well, it's late afternoon and it definitely is dark here.
Right. So we are talking about flow today and kind of how that, how that fits into what we notice about the way that our kids dive into things and learn, and hopefully some time maybe to talk about even what we notice for ourselves, as far as how we get, you know, interested in things and what that process looks like for us. So I thought I would just start with a fairly general definition that I found, and this is from J.A. Schmidt at the Northern Illinois University. And so this definition talks about flow as being a state of optimal experience characterized by total absorption in the task at hand, a merging of action and awareness in which the individual loses track of both time and self. So that to me, I mean, I can think of examples. I'm not sure I could come up with a better definition because I feel like that really does speak quite a bit to what I notice, both in myself and in my kids when they're in that state of flow with learning. And I feel like I have read some really good stuff from Pam Larecchia on the idea of flow as well. And I looked and I wasn't able to find it, but I'm going to try to maybe dig that up and add that somewhere at the end of the episode, because I think there was some really good thinking about it, I guess, in the context of unschooling and of just kind of parenting in general. So, and I think for me, I don't know about you two, I had never heard of the term, sort of the idea of like flow with learning until I started reading about homeschooling. And even then, it's not up there with things like deschooling or strewing or anything like that. It's kind of something that it's a few people have written about it, but I bet most parents can relate to it, because when I saw the definition, I was like, yeah, that makes sense to me. That period of time where you just see your child so engaged in something that they are, it's just so immersive. Right? Really engaged, really immersive. And that idea of losing a sense of time makes sense to me. Like even for myself, periods of time where I've really been diving into things. So yeah, so I'm looking forward to just kind of thinking about that today and kind of hearing your perspectives on it as well. And I have found it interesting just to look at how that plays out through different ages too, like kind of ages and phases. And the first thing that came to my mind was thinking of the younger years, because I think as our kids get older, like Hayley, you might be able to relate to this too. It's a little harder to see what's going on. As kids get older, you'll suddenly realize that they've really been digging into something, but it's not, my experience at least, is it's not always as obvious right off the bat. But when my kids were little, I feel like I was seeing this all the time, or lots of the time, and I just didn't have language for it. But yeah, like I just, and Ashley, I think I might have talked about this a little bit on Clubhouse a couple of weeks ago around the stories really that one of my sons would create with all the model animals, and there would be like all these different things set up with various habitats and battles happening, but there was a an entire storyline happening. And that would be like, that wasn't something that he just sat down and set up for 5 minutes. Like, this was something that he was really into. And aside from the actual time setting it up, there was the prep of like knowing which store he could access a certain type of, you know, maybe certain insects or jungle animals or whatever. So part of the flow for him was the prep as well. It feels like that to me, like there was the setup, but then there was also the lead up to planning it. And I think I talked that day actually about me kind of learning not to, like, you can't just rush in and clean all that stuff up. Right? It's not like, okay, we've played, it's time to put it all away. Like, I get that that has to happen sometimes, but I think when kids are in a real state of just a real state of creativity, and they're really, I would almost describe it as being in their zone, it's difficult to just come through and say, okay, it all needs to be picked up now. It all needs to be put away. And anyway, that's something I definitely came to think a lot about. You know, my daughter's art and crafting stuff as well, is how does creativity and flow work together? And, you know, what role can we play in supporting that rather than, I don't want to say stomping on it, because it's nobody's intention to cut children's learning short. But, you know, what was I doing inadvertently that was stopping the deepening of that learning and that creativity? And yeah, but those were some of the pieces that I just kind of really started observing in myself. Go ahead, Haley.
Sorry, Erin. I thought it was so interesting what you said there about the prep, because when I was thinking about times that I've seen my children in flow, I was thinking about, I mean, we're still having it here at the moment. Talking teddies is a big thing in my house. My youngest daughter, she loves talking teddies, and they have amazing adventures, and there are all kinds of towns that get set up and different lands and sometimes she spends, you know, I think, oh, I haven't seen her for a while, I'll go and see if she's all right, and she's told me that she's about to go off and do something, and then I'll go and see her, and she said, oh, I haven't actually started talking yet, but she spent, you know, an hour maybe or something setting the whole thing up. And there's so much joy in that, I think, isn't there? That is, you know, so much of the fun, isn't it? And then obviously then she starts talking. And sometimes that talking doesn't last anywhere near as long as the preparation did. But like you say, that thing about being able to keep things out sometimes, because she may want that story to go on for days. And then it's kind of looking for ways that you can enable that story to go on. But, you know, if sometimes it happens in her bedroom, but sometimes it involves, you know, the whole house if they're going on a long adventure somewhere. And it's about trying to find ways of not cutting short the fun for her, but enabling us all still to get around without standing on a teddy or something. Yeah. So just when you said about the preparation, that is that's something that I definitely see so much here. But thinking about the older ones in my house as well, well, I guess going back to younger times as well, Lego is a big thing in our house, where I've noticed that flow state comes, and that's still happening now, because even the old ones still enjoy Lego, and my son particularly does a lot of custom Lego builds. And again, for him, a lot of the kind of flow state happens in the designing and the setting up, getting to the point where he's about to build things. So that's something that's definitely happened when they were younger and still happens, particularly for him, as, you know, he's in his late teens and he still really gets into the zone with that.
I appreciate the conversation starting actually at this point, because I can relate so much to with my 9 and my 6-year-old and where they're at with their play. And as I'm listening to both of you share, I was thinking about how lots of times individually, when they are starting to get into the zone on their own, kind of on their own, like when they're not playing together, they're playing separately, I don't think as much of that setup Not to say it doesn't happen. It might, and it's just not apparent to me. But as I was listening to you guys share, I was thinking about when my two play together, it's often when they're like, they'll often be creating their own game, which has a lot of pieces to it. And they spend forever setting up the game, what the game's going to look like. Like they spend most of the time that they're together through all of this is talking about how they're going to play this game. And listening into it is really interesting because I'm just waiting for them to actually start playing the game. But, and they do eventually, but it is definitely at times it's the setup that takes up the most amount of time, which makes me think like, what's going on there and what's happening while they're working together, trying to figure out how they're going to do whatever it is. And I find they do that in the house a lot, but they also do it a lot when we go outside. So if we're in the backyard or if we go out like on a trail or in like a wooded area without like the distractions of, you know, whatever technology and just doing stuff around the house, mom saying to when I interrupt them, and they get into these like imaginative games and worlds, but there still is when they're doing it together, a lot of discussion first about the setup, whatever, you know, how it's going to look and how they're going to play it. So it's really interesting to watch.
That makes me curious about, and again, I don't have anything on hand to say, except I know there's work that's been done on it, just around sort of stages of creativity, which of course are going to be really individual. But I do think that I've read some pieces on that because I think, you know, like I know what I've experienced here and what I've heard from lots of other people is also periods of time where kids will cocoon for a long time and then kind of come out of that period. When I say cocoon, I mean, you know, really it maybe looks like rest or look like there's not much happening at all. And then they'll come out of that space with these, I mean, new ideas and maybe even a new capacity for ideas. And then there's this, you know, Ashley, what you're describing around the, it sounds like they're loving the brainstorming, right? Like that enjoyment of coming up with ideas. And yeah, I'm going to hunt around a little bit because I know I read some interesting stuff around, and of course it varies from person to person, but there is some thinking around those stages of creativity. But yeah, I love that planning stage, or I don't even know if that's the right word for it, but the excitement of ideas. Mm-hmm. And that idea of being outside in a wooded area, like I've seen that so much too. And I've seen it with, like groups of kids where they get into a game outdoors and they've got all kinds of things figured out, or, you know, a duo, whatever, where you have more than one person. So it's not just the one person's learning. They've come up with something and it's often imaginary. And how, you know, that just makes me think about the fact that I was saying, well, I started to observe and realize I needed to be more respectful around cleanup in the house. And it makes me think about that kind of standard thing that parents all know where kids don't want to leave, right? They're doing something, they're involved in something, and it's like, no, it's time to go. And again, there are realities in life. Like we can't always stay somewhere forever. But just being mindful of that, right? Just being considerate of, okay, maybe we do need to go. It's gotten dark. We have to get the car back for somebody, whatever. There could be any number of things. But I think if kids feel heard, that we understand, like, yeah, this is difficult. You guys are working so hard on this game or this storyline. It just feels different to respect what's actually happening for them in that moment. It's not just a refusal to leave. There could be some really, you know, interesting things that they've been working together on. So
yeah. And if I can just quickly add to that, it's making me think about, my kids kind of show me that in their own way, because when the play does have to come to an end eventually, whether it's their choosing or maybe they're not getting along anymore, but they keep coming back to those same games. Like my kids have created these games. I can't even think of they named them. I can't think off the top of my head, but for years now, like for the past, like I could go back a few years where they've invented this game for the first time. And often they want to go back to the same place to play that game. Or anytime we are back at that place, if it's not at home, they're like, oh, we play this game here. So to me, that's a message that this was like meaningful to them, and they really were in a state of flow, and they're able to return to it. And just also going off of the cleaning up piece, and I don't want to jump around too much, but one thing that we might end up talking about today, because especially with my older one, a lot of his flow and play happens in games, like video games. And what's really neat is I don't have to worry about cleaning any of that up. So him and I together have actually created these whole, one in particular, Minecraft world. And just as we were talking about, because he has his bedroom and he has his stuff set up and his play set up. And because it's in his bedroom, we don't have to worry about picking it up too often. Different when it's throughout the house. But one really big advantage to some of this flow that he gets into is it's electronic or it's digital. So it's in the computer and it can pause easily, right? Like that's such a norm with playing video games. You just pause it, but it doesn't get in the way of anything. It just stays on the computer, which I've never thought about before, but I would say that that's a nice advantage.
And when I was thinking about flow earlier, and I was thinking about the whole absorption thing, yeah, video games was one of the first things that came to my mind, because thinking about losing track of time and space, and I know this myself, when I get the chance to play video games, or particularly when I'm on the computer, often I'll be doing something and then I get interrupted or it's time that I have to leave and make dinner or something. And that's the time that I realize that I'm hungry or I'm thirsty or I need the toilet because I've been so absorbed. And, you know, I've noticed that with my children over the years as well, that I think, you know, I'll say, you know, have you thought about having a break or whatever? And they're like, no, I've got to do this, got to do this. And then when they get to the end of the level, then they'll say, oh, yeah, actually, oh, I didn't realise I am really hungry now. And it does totally, yeah, you get totally immersed. That's the point of flow, isn't it? It's, and it is, yeah, it's easy to see that in video games, because you can see how, particularly as in this house, we seem to have a lot of completionists. They you know, they want to get 100%, or they want to do all the side quests that are in a level, and obviously if you're trying to do that, and with video games, I think the beauty of well-built video games is that whole thing about being just on the edge of competency, giving you just enough challenge that you stay engaged and that you want to keep going. You know, it's not too easy that you kind of get bored, and it's not too hard that you get totally frustrated. That's kind of one of the, you know, good game design, I guess, has that incorporated in it, doesn't it? So you kind of, you're almost there. You've almost beaten this level. So you just want to keep going, don't you? Or you've almost solved that puzzle. So you want to keep going till you've done it. And I can totally empathize with that, because that happens to me if I play video games. Totally.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder too, you know, I know there's lots of conversation and concern about video games. And then I'm thinking sometimes our kids or people, because, you know, as you're saying, Haley and Ashley, it sounds like, you know, you've been having some really good times with your son too. So we shouldn't always be talking about video games in connection with children only or teens, but it's like, are we, you know, throwing words around like obsession or whatever, when maybe we're not used to seeing kids in a state of flow, having that uninterrupted time, to complete those challenges, to work through things, to create. So it's just, yeah, it just makes me wonder if to the, I'm going to say untrained eye, because I do think that we're still not at a point in society where we fully understand, like, technology has come much more quickly than we've probably had time to understand it or adapt to it. So yeah, I just wonder if often people are labeling things and, you know, maybe sometimes people are struggling, but often I think, you know, is that person in a deep state of flow where they're creating and they're meeting challenges? And Ashley, so something each of you said kind of stood out for me around you and your son, being involved in building worlds and doing different things right now. And when you say that it gives me the sense like you're kind of in a state of flow with it as well. So it's that idea of not always separating our children's learning off as this is what they're into right now. And when we take that time to kind of look at it and from their perspective, or maybe it's our own excitement. It's maybe it's not that big of a stretch, you know, to get involved in it. Sometimes we can both get in a state of flow with things, not just video games, anything, you know, like a board game that everybody gets into over a period of time or a book that you're reading together. And it's like, you can't wait to get to that next chapter together or to get back to play that game again tomorrow. So that's really fun too. When, you know, you kind of find you're in sync a little bit. That really happened for me over the last, I'd say, 5 or 6 months with my daughter, in that we both kind of, I don't know who had the interest first. I've always been really interested in nature, but we both developed this interest in birds, like just absolutely geeking out about birds. And it's just been so interesting because it's not just me supporting her interest or her being kind of like tolerant of mine. It's become this thing where we are in a state of flow, and it's not the type of flow maybe that we're talking about for like a 2-hour stretch of creating something. It's like this ongoing kind of flow that's just like, and maybe flow isn't the right word for it, but it kind of feels like it's just always in the background. It's not concentrated to like these 3 hours on a Saturday afternoon. It's just kind of flowing there in the background, which is really fun. Like, it's just really cool to share that with somebody. Haley, on back when you'd been talking about Lego with your son, and it made me think how I have noticed we had Lego here. I feel like, we did lots of things, but when I see what other people do with Lego, I'm always a little bit regretful maybe that we didn't dive into Lego a little bit more, but whatever, we didn't. We had some basic sets. But when I hear people talk about it, it makes me realize too that there's like an agelessness to it, I think, because I know there are adults that really engage a lot with Lego as well. So again, it's maybe that idea of like creating and challenging yourself and building, like there's so much to it. Yeah. So that was just something that popped up for me about the agelessness of things. It doesn't necessarily have to be a children's activity or a, yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. And there's so many things you made me think about, Erin, but one of the things you said about the untrained eye and this whole idea of maybe because flow's not something that I'd heard about either. You were saying before about not hearing about it until you were reading about homeschooling. And I think I agree. I think that's probably the same for me. And you said something about wondering what the right conditions are for flow. And that made me think about that. The fact that for a lot of children, a lot of their life is very structured, isn't it? There's a lot of, you know, if you do have to go to school at a certain time, and then you've got the whole business of swapping classes and classrooms, and then you come home, and then maybe you've got, you know, you go to dance classes or maybe you go to brownies or guides or whatever, and those are all great, beautiful things. But for a lot of people, their life is very structured, and there are a lot of appointments after appointments, and one of the things you need to get into flow, I think, is a little bit of time, a little bit of space to be able to start something and to be going along with it, and then to get to the point where I guess it feels like it takes off, it become, you know, I don't think flow, at least for me, it's not something that necessarily happens kind of instantly. It's something that you start doing something, don't you, and maybe it's even something that you start doing reluctantly, but you start doing something, and then you get into it a little bit more, and as you get into it a little bit more, then sometimes, hopefully, that's when the flow takes off, doesn't it? So I do think it is, you need to have a little bit of time and space, and I guess that's one of the things that as home educators, that we're fortunate that we do have, you know, or our children have that time, you know, we have that time as a family to be able to get into a state of flow sometimes, or more times perhaps than if you've got a very structured life and you don't have a lot of free time, because I think that again is another thing as well, that flow is I think you can get into flow when it's not necessarily your idea to do the thing, but I think it probably helps if you've got a bit of freedom of choice and autonomy and you've chosen to do something, then perhaps it makes it a little bit more likely that you're going to get into to flow state because you've chosen that activity and you're enjoying it and you're motivated. And I like that kind of vision of taking off. When I was thinking about my own flow state, I was thinking that's how it feels for me sometimes, because I know one of the things for me, I think, is writing. That's when I get into the flow state, and I can be very reluctant to start that. But then if I kind of force myself to sit down, then after a little while, quite often, if I've got the time, I will get into to a flow state. So I think that whole thing about what conditions is a really interesting, really interesting aspect.
Yeah, and that makes me think, Haley, around so that the idea of time and space, and perhaps, you know, how does that work when we, if we have really structured lives? And it also makes me think about what we makes. So I guess I'm kind of going in a bit of a circle here, but I think I'll come around. It makes me think about what we value in children's learning, and maybe in our, even in our own projects and learning. So it's like, does that state of flow always need to lead to a finished project? And so I would say it does not. And then even if it does lead to a finished project, it could be it could feel finished for the learner, but it might not look like what's valued traditionally. Right. So, I mean, I've definitely had that experience with my kids where, like Ashley, you're talking about that planning process. And so I'm excited to hear them planning and I'm imagining what that's going to look like. And it doesn't look like what I think, imagine it's going to look like based on what they're planning, but it feels finished for them, right? They'll come to a point and they've gotten what they need out of that experience. But I think we think a lot about tangible things like art projects that you put on the wall or fully developed projects isn't always what flow is about, right? So it's, yeah. And it reminds me of a period of time, like my daughter was fairly young. I think she was probably 4. And the reason I remember that age is that sort of the age in our province where kids begin like full-time school. And she wasn't, because we were home educating. And during that period of time, I was spending some time in a quite a well thought of Montessori school, not as a teacher, but a couple of people that I was working with, I was kind of helping support them in that environment. So the result was that a few mornings a week, I was in the school for, I think it was kind of like the months of, like, I'm going to say September, October. And I can remember feeling, you know, you go into that environment and it's quite impressive looking. So you walk in and there's a big aquarium and it's very, it's just very bright and it's very beautiful. And there are beautiful art projects on the wall. And it felt very, I mean, polished kind of, it was very well presented. Let's put it that way. And then I'd be driving home and I would be feeling badly that I hadn't been with my 4-year-old that morning. I mean, she was being taken care of at home, either if my husband was off or by her grandfather. But at the same time, I was kind of like, oh, these other 3 and 4 and 5-year-olds are doing all this artwork and they're learning these songs and they're doing all these things. And, you know, I haven't seen her yet this morning. And I'd be getting home around noon, but I would come in, and specifically around that time, she was really into architectural blocks, like wooden architectural blocks. And so I would come in and there would just be these like really interesting structures that she would have built. But then it's so often not just about that. Then there's all kinds of stuffed animals involved, right? Because the structures for something. And then there's a whole area where then there's a tea party set up. So there's, you know, so there are all these different kind of aspects to the same piece of play. And, it was just so interesting to kind of try to imagine the path of activity that had happened. And I remember noticing it was that period of time where I really saw her love of like symmetry, because everything that she built, it was so creative, but like fantastically symmetrical. It was just, so I would just sit there and I would think, okay, yes, she didn't do all these little planned activities, but she's created this whole world, and not entirely unfacilitated. Like there was an adult in the house, but not the same as being with a group of kids where you're being led through activities throughout the morning. And then when I started watching more closely, at the school itself, yes, there were so many fun things, but I don't think that kids were ever getting to a very deep level with anything. Because it was busy and they were getting kind of moved from activity to activity, and the art projects were beautiful, but the only variation would really be if somebody chose more blue than green, or, you know, like it's so different than creating what I was walking into when I came in the door. So I think, yeah, I mean, Haley, I guess that was all just to say that idea of time and space is huge. And I don't think we really understand how much time and space can be necessary to get into that really deep state where kids really feel like they're owning their learning and their things are kind of, things are building off of one another, right? So yeah.
Yeah. And I would think too, when you have that time and space, the other thing that's coming to mind right away is that trust piece, right? So as I'm listening to you talk, Erin, like you had to like lean into trusting your daughter was doing something valuable, right? I think I wonder and I question about our need as parents, as teachers, as adults, this need to see our children's learning, really break down and understand what is it they're working on right now. And then also like, yeah. And so when you have a finished project, it kind of makes it that learning more visible, right? If they put something visible and concrete together for us to see, we can, we can celebrate them, I guess. It was something they ended up enjoying doing, but, yeah, I question a lot about where that idea comes from, but I think sometimes it really is. It's that time and space, and then also trusting that our kids are working on whatever it is that they're wanting to and needing to work on at the time, regardless of what it looks like. But I have the same thing. And I think as a homeschool parent, or and maybe especially as an unschool parent, there's that pressure. Or maybe I should just say, like, when we feel responsible for our children's education and their days, and we want to make sure they're getting everything that they need, we can feel that pressure of, I don't know, having evidence, I guess, of what they're learning and what skills they're working on. And when there's like something concrete or a finished project, I went through a phase not long ago, really, where I think I even got a book on like project-based learning, which there's nothing wrong with project-based learning, you know, unless the kid really doesn't want to do it and they're being pushed to do it. Because for one of my kids, it often or maybe rarely results in, you know, some type of concrete thing that I can put up on the wall or on the fridge. Whereas my other guy does a little bit more so. But yeah, so I think it's definitely time, space, but also diving into figuring out how to, you know, that trust piece, which I don't know that we had when we were, you know, especially if we were in traditional school and we were a student, we always had to be proving and showing our work and our learning. And I feel pressure at times to look for that with my kids, but I try to trust more.
I think that's an ongoing part of our work, isn't it? As a home educating parent, and especially as an unschooling parent, yeah, that the whole thing about finding peace with the fact that learning is happening, and that we won't always know what that learning is, and you know, and it's the same for ourselves, isn't it? We don't always know what we've learned from a situation until another situation arises, or you start talking about something and you process what you're learning as you've learned as you're talking about it, or somebody asks you a question. And I think you were talking about reading earlier, one of you, I can't remember, there was some it came into my head about reading. I hadn't really thought about reading as being the kind of situation where you have a flow state, but we do a lot of reading aloud in our house. That's always been something that we've done while we've been home educating and before. And I was thinking about how when you're, you know, when you're reading aloud to a child, because we're not doing book book reports or book reviews. I mean, actually, my children do book reviews because they want to, because they love going on Goodreads and writing about books. But, you know, because they're not required to do book reviews and reports and or comprehension tests, you know, you might wonder sometimes, are they actually listening? And I know I've had other parents say to me, well, I don't read aloud to my children anymore because they're not listening. And when you dive into that, sometimes you discover that perhaps, you know, the children are fiddling about with things or they're not sitting still or whatever. But my experience in our family has definitely been that even when those things are happening, they're actually taking in so much of the story. And when it comes to somebody else asking them about the story, or perhaps they're really interested in a little aspect of it and they want to discuss that with you more, you realize how much of the detail and how much they've reflected on that story, even though, you know, they may have been drawing at the same time or coloring at the same time or doing something else that you think, oh, maybe they weren't, maybe, you know, or throwing a ball about even, and you think, oh, maybe they're not listening. And I know some, you know, sometimes I've stopped and said, oh, maybe it's not the right time for you at the moment, and then they'll be like, oh, I was enjoying that, wanted to know what happened to so and so. And you know, that's a really interesting piece, isn't it, about you know, none of us can know what is going on in somebody else's mind, and that whole finding peace with that is our ongoing part of our ongoing work, isn't it? I think.
Well, and it makes me wonder, like, because yes, that's true. You do hear people. I have heard people say that too, Haley, like, my kids, you know, we don't do this because they're not into it. And I mean, maybe they're not, but you're right. It's so hard to, it's so hard to know what those, what those layers of learning are like. And I'm thinking of one of my kids who used to get into almost like a meditative state with like little toy motors and zooming back and forth and zooming back and forth. And I don't think it was about the motorcycle. I think he was creating, I'm not even sure if he was thinking about motorcycles. Right. And so if you were to look at it, it would be like, oh, he did like motorcycles, but it was almost more of a repetitive comfort action, maybe comparable to fidgeting while listening to a story. It was like he was zooming his motorcycle while kind of thinking of things, or I don't know that he was creating anything in his mind necessarily. Depends, I guess, how you define that, but there was definitely something happening. And maybe, I mean, here's the other thing, maybe that was kind of a meditative state he would get in that allowed another part of his mind to rest. Like, I'm interested in, I mean, I think when we're talking about flow, we're talking about kind of something that's really concentrated, maybe an active, but, and I don't know, but I'm just curious, you know, are there different stages or sort of brain spaces we come in and out of that? Because I think, you know, are those periods of time where we're maybe not looking very productive part of it? I think they're definitely part of it, even if they don't look productive externally, but even if they aren't necessarily obviously productive to the person who's in flow, is that still part of it? Some sort of lead up, or I don't know. I'm just really thinking out loud now, but it's just interesting to think of the way the brain works, that, you know, what we're obviously doing or looking really interested in the moment, there's other pieces that are coming from that. I don't know.
I think that's super interesting. Sorry, Ashley.
No, go ahead.
There's that thing, isn't there, about how sometimes, you know, you have your best ideas when you're in the shower, because you let your mind has a chance to rest, and then things come to the surface. And, you know, and sometimes that happens to me with things, you know, I suppose things, mundane things like cleaning or hoovering, you're doing those things and you're thinking about something else. But when I was thinking about flow, I was thinking about the quality of the experience. I mean, that's a good thing too, but there's also the other type of experience where you're doing something mundane like washing up or cleaning, and sometimes when you get into a flow state where you're not thinking about anything else and you're properly concentrating on that thing that you're doing, the quality of that experience is somehow so much different. It's a totally different experience to the one where you're distracted and you're thinking about something else. And good things come out of both those things, I think. I mean, I've got a bit of a bad reputation in my house for people get new mugs and they're like, oh, don't put that near the sink when mum's washing up because it'll get broken. Because I often wash up in a hurry and things sometimes do get smashed. And, you know, in the bowl, I'll be like jiggling about too much and like, oh dear, what have I done? Well, yeah, which is very dangerous. But that thing about sometimes I'll be, you know, washing up is just something I need to get done because I need plates for dinner and I need to get out the door. I just want the place clear or whatever. And then other times there'll be times where I actually, almost like you say, Erin, about getting into a meditative state, I'm kind of concentrating on it. And sometimes those times are the best times because actually then it doesn't feel like a chore. It and then you kind of get that enthusiasm for, oh, I'll just clean this side and I'll just clean this side. And there's kind of a joy from that that you don't always get when you're doing it in a more distracted way. I mean, sometimes that other way will help you solve problems or, you know, come up with good ideas. So that's a good thing to, you know, neither of the different ways of doing it are better that, you know, are better or worse. It's just, that was one thing that I thought about, for the times that I get into flow. And that kind of brought me back to the whole conditions for when do you get into flow. And one of the things I was thinking was, not only do you need the time and the space, but I guess you also need the, I don't really know how to phrase it, you need the intention, I guess, or the curiosity or the spark, something that actually makes you start doing it and focus on it rather than focusing on other things. I don't think I've said that very eloquently. But, you know, I guess that's what I was thinking about doing things reluctantly as well. There is a chance for you to get into flow, even if you're doing, you know, lots of kids will get into flow at school, won't they, or in other situations. It doesn't have to be your idea, but I guess you have to have that. There needs to be something about it that appeals to you, that enables you to get on that runway and focus on it on a little bit and then take off. Oh, I'm back to my little metaphor.
Yes. And, you know, that makes me think, I agree with all that, Haley. And what that brings to mind too is need a part of it as well, right? So when I was originally thinking about flow, I was thinking about like, I don't know, creativity and imagination and people diving into their passions and that kind of thing. And that's all true. And yet when you're talking about conditions beyond time and space, so, you know, having that spark or, you know, just those other pieces that might lead to it, it makes me curious about the idea of need as well. And whether we can actually really kind of get diving into something simply because we needed to. It might not ever have been something we chose to, but actually once we get down that path, it kind of snowballs and that, I'm trying to think what the word is, the motivation, it does kind of start rolling. And that has happened recently in our house in the last couple of weeks because we had two major appliances that kind of went at the same time, our washing machine and our refrigerator. And so both of those things we determined could no longer be repaired. Like we needed to get new ones. And so that was not anything that we would have obviously thought, you know what, let's go out and spend a whole bunch of money and move a whole bunch of things up basement stairs and do all this stuff. That was not anything that we would have like by choice decided to dive into. But in the end, it's actually kind of became a whole thing. Like, a few of us went together to choose them. I don't know. We got researching prices. We got researching different kinds. We got talking about, I don't know. It's just, we've been talking a lot about appliances in the last week. And when they arrived, it was quite an exciting time. Like even, you know, I've got a couple people in our house that really like to understand the way things work. So, yeah, there was a lot of focus on how things work and you know, value for money or whatever, I would actually describe it as kind of like family flow that we got into. But it's nothing that we would have chosen 3 weeks ago. It wouldn't have been like, you know, I don't know. It's not a topic that sounds interesting, but somehow there's been an energy around it. So I don't know. I'm just thinking, you know, does that happen with necessity as well? Maybe.
I can, as you're sharing, guys, I can think of a couple things that come to mind, but I think this is what happens to me. And it's almost like two different types of flow for me, where like I can get into my own flow out of my own, like it's sparked from my own interest or passion. And I prefer that flow. But that being said, and like I think I get more out of that flow. But that being said, there's this other type where, it's almost like as a family or as like mom with my two kids, we get into things and they spark it for me. So like one example, like I would have chosen this myself, but is my 6-year-old for his 6th birthday asked for his fish tank, and we hadn't had fish before. So I went down the rabbit hole of with him learning all about fish and the first fish tank and just everything we kind of needed to know about caring for fish as a pet. And we definitely got into some flow. Like I spent, I don't know what it would have been, a couple of weeks anyway, really focused on, you know, kind of that preparation and learning with him. And I think seeing the joy that it brought him brought me joy as well. And we got into this flow together, but not something. It's same, actually, you know what? It's maybe the same when I get into Minecraft with my 9-year-old. I don't know that I would have ever taken the time to start playing Minecraft. But same thing, it's like that other type of flow where it's with him. So I can get into that flow with him. And I really can. It's genuine. I'm not pretending to be more into it. Like I actually am. But if I didn't have him to do that with, or if I didn't have my 6-year-old to, you know, learn about the fish tank, I probably wouldn't have been sparked independently. And so it's interesting. There's probably lots of different examples but I think it goes back to what you're saying, Erin, about you and your daughter and your shared interest around birds. And I think like that's such a wonderful thing, but those things don't happen unless there's that time and the space. And I think sometimes we do need someone else to engage with to get into a state of flow around certain things. And one thing I was thinking about for today, and I was curious about your experience around it with having older children. And it's different for both my kids, but my 6-year-old in particular, I find really, I don't know if need would be the right way or word, but prefers and wants me or someone else to engage in his interest or flow, because those kind of mix up for me quite a bit. He doesn't want to go off on his own for too long and get into flow. It's very much, I don't know, in partnership with someone. My older guy too, but he's a little bit more like in the flow and okay on his own for longer periods of time. Whereas and he's always kind of been more that way, I think. Whereas my 6-year-old, it's very much like a shared flow, and he will go off on his own to do it for a while, but it's usually, can I tell you something? Or asking questions, like a lot of conversation around it. And I'm curious watching him if that'll change as he gets older, or if that's a personality thing where he'll always prefer to, at least for a good part of it. And I can relate to that. I mean, that's why I have these conversations with you guys, right? I can get in, we talk about things that are connected to what I do for flow, and I can do a lot of it on my own, but I definitely at times want to connect and engage with other people around my interests and things that I feel like I go down, you know, those rabbit holes and get into a state of flow. Sorry, that was a lot.
No, you kind of made me think again about that. What you were talking about, Erin, about a finished product at the end of this flow business, you know, is there a finished product? And obviously sometimes there is, like you know it might not be something you can actually touch, but maybe you finished the computer game level or you finished a design on the computer or something, but then or you've built but then there'll be physical things, like you've built a model or something, but then there's all the intangible things that you can't you can't measure, like you were saying, Ashley, about the whole sometimes that talking through is about processing the learning that's been going on, isn't it? And but the imaginative play that we were talking about before, you know, there's a lot of times where children are processing things that are going on in their lives or things they've just learned about or heard about or whatever, and they're processing that through imaginative play, or they're practicing skills and deepening things like empathy and that, aren't they? And another thing that I think comes out of flow for me, when I think back to I'm going to use the example of writing again, I think there's a famous quote which I'm going to bodge, which is something along the lines of I like having written, but the writing not so much. And sometimes the act of writing is painful. I think I really don't want to write another article. But the fact that I get into flow, I guess, is what fuels me. I know that that happens, and it won't happen magically. I have to sit in the chair and start working, and then the flow takes off. But it's that flow, I guess, that keeps me coming back. So I think one of the benefits of flow, I guess, is about it fuels our passion or our motivation to do these, to do whatever it is again, doesn't it? It's not necessarily that there's a product then, but maybe it enables us to keep going with a project perhaps that we would have ditched if we hadn't got that sort of experience from it.
Yes, and the writing. Okay, so Ashley, I'm going to come back to that thought you had about personalities too. And just before I forget, the writing piece, Haley, I play around a lot for myself with, does it work better for me to just start writing and then ideas start to flow, or does it work better for me if I'm out for a walk or something and kind of, you know, concepts or ideas are coming to my head, almost like pre-writing and then writing it down. And there's not really an absolute answer to that. I notice it one way sometimes, and I notice it, you know, in another way. I've also been playing around with the idea, I guess, around self-discipline in writing. So how do I view writing in my life? Is it something that I really, I value, and so I would like to help myself kind of find systems to get it done? Or am I putting that in a box that it doesn't need to be in? Am I kind of compartmentalizing it or whatever? And I mean, I'm not going to have the answer to this question today because I've been wondering about it for a while, but what it brings up for me is the idea that the idea of choice and the idea of freedom and the idea, I guess, also of the time and the process of how we figure out these things. If we're wanting to create things, if we're wanting to, we're kind of looking for that state of flow, because we do need to get into that to a degree sometimes to do really good work. But having that as an adult, having that time and freedom to play with that a little bit, like what works for me, or this used to work for me, I feel like it doesn't so much anymore, you know, what could I do differently? And those are things that I think it's so nice to have opportunities within homeschooling and unschooling to have that space for kids to really learn who they are and how they learn best, because those are just not things that are standardized, right? Like we just don't, even within ourselves, we change the way that we create and the way that we kind of get into those deeper thoughts. So anyway, that's just what it kind of makes me think about is, yeah, how much freedom is really needed for us to figure out the best way that we learn and what we even want to get out of something. And then Ashley, just around the personality piece, like I noticed that too, around having, one child specifically who really liked me to be part of that flow. And even if I wasn't directly in that activity, wanted me not too long after so that they could process, right? Like it was kind of like, and it really was a sharing, I think, of the excitement of it. So I don't know if that's maybe what you're talking about a little bit too, but that's what I noticed. It wasn't like I don't know, it's like they really wanted to share what they were learning. And part of it was to be seen, yes, but part of it was they wanted me to have that opportunity to see how cool this thing was, right? Like really share that information in case I was interested. And I can only speak for my own family, but that for this particular person, that has not changed. That interest in processing and talking it through, and really wanting to engage people so that other people can find out how cool that interest is still there. And I mean, they also have a really strong ability to look at other people's interests. And so, for example, like if we were going in the car, you know, this is one son of mine, he will put together a playlist that he knows I will enjoy, and he'll be excited, right, to put the playlist on. So it's not just about sharing his interests. He's also wanting to be part of mine. So but it is a real shared, he really craves that shared experience. So I don't know if I answered what you were, you know, talking about, but I've really noticed that that's continued. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much, Erin. That's such a wonderful thing. And yeah, my older son, I would say, is similar to that, where it's like, he just values his own interests. And like, I think he recognizes how good he feels when he's engaging with them. So I have noticed that. I can't think of a specific example, but he's definitely at times done that, where he's recognized that something is happening of my interest, or he can call me over to show me, or he'll say like, oh, I know this is something you would enjoy or you would like. And he wants me to experience that. Whereas my other son, I think there's definitely a piece of that, but it's even more so, I think the way he processes and also sharing in the excitement of what he's learning. Like, he just finds it so thrilling. He's so into animals, and he just finds all of it so interesting that he, and his way, like, he wants to share that. And he is one, like me, he goes on and talks about things so much that, to share what it is he's learning about and to have conversations about it. So it's interesting to see the differences between them as well. And then, I think a lot of it will just carry on as they get older too, which will be interesting to be part of.
I think I've got at least one child like that myself. And one thing that made me think about is there's also a bit of vulnerability, I think, around all this, isn't there? There's kind of the issue of sharing and having somebody else appreciate what you're talking about. You need to have a level of vulnerability to do that. And that's made me think about another condition of flow, I think, is peace. And there's almost two parts to that. There's the part about, I think you mentioned it, Ashley, about not being interrupted or trying not to interrupt and things, that kind of peace. So you've got that time, space and a chance to really dive into something. But there's also that kind of peace as well, of a kind of a safe space to get into flow, almost like a sense of security and feeling like it's okay to dive deep into something. And this is all off the top of my head, but again, there seems to be two elements to that. Almost like the I guess if you are totally absorbed and immersed in something, then you're kind of vulnerable. I think about us as being animals, that leaves you in a vulnerable state. And I guess the kind of problem solving or survival type of flow, which I guess when we were hunter gatherers or whatever, where we'd have got into the total flow of following a wild animal or something, I don't know, completely out of my zone as a vegan, but anyway, the kind of that flow that you would have had to get into, I suppose, to be able to find food. But you would have been vulnerable then, wouldn't you, from something else attacking you, I guess. And then there were two things, I can't remember what the other thing was then, but I think that peace is, having a sense of peace is an important piece, I think, of flow. Mm-hmm. That's just come, I don't know. I don't know if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting. You know, it does, Haley. And I think, it makes me think a little bit, and maybe this is what you're getting at, or maybe I'm off on another tangent here, but for me, I think it relates. I often think too, so let's say I'm sitting in a library and I'm writing, the degree of flow, I mean, I love being in libraries, don't get me wrong. So there's a certain there can be a certain zone that you get into. I think for me, I tend to move a lot when I am thinking of new ideas. So if I'm at home, I will be walking. Even actually, if I'm on the phone with somebody and we're kind of brainstorming or figuring something out, I will walk while I'm on the phone, or often I'll take the phone out to the trampoline. And that's just how I've always, and it's funny, I didn't notice it about myself. As a kid, my family thought I was quite odd because I had this skipping rope, and I would often either go into the backyard or into the living room, and I would circle with this skipping rope, or I would just kind of like move it back and forth. And that helped me. It helped me think. And even now, like as we're talking, because, you know, I'm feeling like we're generating ideas and I'm in a degree of state of flow right now. And I've been moving this pencil back and forth the whole time, but I wouldn't do that if I'm sitting in a library. So that makes me think, Haley, even about this, that safety of, not being watched, you're talking about like not being followed, but, or if you're being watched, being in a space free of judgment, right? So if we have a child who is maybe more kinesthetic in the way that they're learning things, so maybe they're pacing as they think about something, or maybe they're, zooming something back and forth during a story or something. Yeah, having that safety of being respected, of having their learning style respected, or just maybe that need for physicality respected. So yeah, it was really as an adult where my kids would say to me, you're always moving a pencil around, or you're always walking when you get thinking about things. And I'm like, that is what I used to do when I was a kid. And my family would tease me because I would, I'm home from school and I'm walking around with the skipping rope, but I'm not skipping. Like I'm slowly moving it, but I was writing stories in my head. But if I had just sat down at a desk, I probably could have written a story, but it just wasn't coming to me the same way. So for me, that's what that safety piece kind of triggered, I guess, in my mind, Haley.
You were definitely on the same wavelength. That is just what I was thinking about, and you explained it beautifully.
Well, and I was just thinking too, my role as a parent and what role I play in that regard, in creating that type of safe space for my kids now when they're younger, and getting curious about the things that they're into, what they're doing, what they're talking about, being curious rather than, because sometimes we're just naturally quick to judge certain things, but being mindful of that and instead trying to lean into curiosity about what it is they're doing, and trusting that there's a reason for it. And what we were talking about earlier, and trying to do that now while they're younger, so that as they get older and maybe become a little bit more self-conscious and worry about other people's thoughts about them. Hopefully I can continue to be that safe person, and hopefully the home environment can allow them that space and safety so that they can continue to just be themselves all the time, but especially so that they can get into that state of flow whenever they choose to, or whenever they are trying to get into the state of flow. Hopefully I can make that easier for them and not harder. By how I am around them. I think one way I find that it's easier for me to do that is when, because I don't engage with them 24/7. I'm not, doing things with them all the time, but if I can, like I've been saying, like the Minecraft is one example, but engage in their flow and be part of that at times, it helps me, what am I trying to say here? Like stay curious about and understand what it is that they're doing a little bit more, because I'm just more part of it. And then hopefully I can continue to be parts of it as they get older.
Ashley, do you find that, I feel like I'm asking a question I already know the answer to, but it's like, because we've talked about this, right? But I think that slowing down is integral to supporting our children with, in their learning and in getting into the state of flow, because we're observing And we're, I think you had made a statement earlier about, you know, you were enjoying things with your son. You weren't just pretending to, but you were actually kind of getting into that zone. And I think, I mean, I've done this. I think lots of parents have done this. And this is kind of what we see where a child is interested in pretend play, for example. And the parent is kind of faking going along with it. They're being polite, but they're not really engaged. And sometimes that's like the reality. But there's such a difference when you really, really try to imagine it from your child's perspective. And you start to see it, like Pamela Rekia talks about this, seeing it through your child's eyes, not just putting yourself in their shoes, but you know, really seeing yourself, or sorry, seeing the situation through your child's eyes. And I think that that's easier to do when we slow down and we take the time and we've had like a range of experiences to observe our children in.
Yeah, absolutely. I noticed that more and more. And I really had to slow down because it is challenging for me anyway to sit down. I'll just keep going and using Minecraft as an example because it's fresh in my mind now. But like, I wouldn't be able to sit down and play an hour of Minecraft if I was stressing about something or thinking about my to-do list or thinking about something I have to get ready to do the next day or that night. Not to say I do nothing. We still have plans and we still do things, but I've had to really just think about what it means to really slow down and what feels right for our family and what works well for our family as far as like what's too many events, like what's too busy for us. Or like maybe we have a busier month. So I try to make sure the next month is a bit slower. And when things don't feel like there's too much and I can just, yeah, take that time with my child to sit down and get into their Minecraft. Like I'm in a space myself where I can do that with them. And yeah, it can be like the tiniest little bit of stress or something weighing on my mind that can pull me out of that really quickly. So by like trying to just overall slow things down, I find I've become more available to my children to spend those times with them. I know not, and I say that like, I know that's not possible for everyone for lots of different reasons. So I'm really grateful that like right now we've been able to, and it's taken time. I've had to learn what this looks like, and we've had to make sacrifices. And I know it's not possible for everyone. And I don't know if it'll always be possible for us to live kind of this, like in this slower paced way where we really get to craft what our days look like. But, that is a big part of how I've been able to, really engage in those activities with them. Thankfully. Did you have another part of that I missed, Erin? Was that,
no, that's exactly, okay. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. And then something I hadn't thought about, but I have a very similar experience, is just me coming to understand myself and what's going to help me be present. And so even, for example, you know, us doing this conversation right now, I would have a hard time diving into something knowing that we were having this conversation. So just allowing myself chunks of time if I'm going to try to engage with something with family members. And I don't think that's the case for everybody, but for me, I just need for myself a certain amount of lead up time to doing something like this. So I would keep this in mind around when we plan to do something or when I plan to get into deeper conversation or, you know, get into a read aloud when they were younger or whatever. So I also think it's about knowing our own rhythms and our own tendencies as far as our ability to be present. So yeah. So yes, that answered my question. And then also that was really cool that I had that thought as well. So yeah, thank you.
I think there's an ongoing, another aspect of our kind of ongoing de-schooling bit is you were talking about the judgment, Ashley, and it made me think about, when I was thinking about when do I get into flow, one of the things I thought about was jigsaw puzzles. And I have a thing that I've said to my children, oh, I can't do it.
I can't start a jigsaw puzzle because then I'll get lost in it and then nothing else will happen. And, you know, and sometimes I say that about reading. I mean, reading a book personally for me, I think we've talked about this before, haven't we, on the podcast, but, you know, my children have then said to me, well, hang on a minute, you want us to be able to take the time to do jigsaw puzzles and to read, don't you? So, you know, you're kind of giving us mixed messages there, Mum. What, you know, but that layer of judgment on myself, thinking I ought to be doing something more productive than jigsaw puzzles or playing Minecraft or something like that. And part of the de-schooling has been about me recognizing that it's not one rule for me and one rule for them kind of thing. And also that I think we touched on this a bit earlier, didn't we? That because you don't know what learning is coming out of a situation, the vehicle through which you're doing the learning sometimes is almost irrelevant. So the time that we spend with our children playing Minecraft or we spend doing jigsaws, there'll be an educational component of those things anyway, because there always is. But then there'll also be all that other learning that's happening that we can't necessarily give a label to. But almost that stuff is probably possibly even more important, isn't it? The relationship parts and the building the relationship that you're doing in those moments of doing something else, but also perhaps the conversations that arise out of that because you've set aside that time to actually be with them. It just made me think about that actually when you were talking. You can't, you know, we don't know what benefits are coming out of those times, do we? We can't know, but also you can't build a relationship with somebody unless you're actually spending time with them, can you? And you can't hope to get to a deeper level with something like, I don't know, Minecraft or sewing or whatever it is without investing the time. I guess those are things that I'm thinking as well.
Yeah, and that gives me this image, Haley, of, you know, whatever our children are, you know, kind of engaged in and creating and just really playing intensely with or about, it's so much of it is this gathering of other experiences. And that's what I find so fun, is to see seemingly unrelated things suddenly coming together in play. And you see these little bits of sometimes it's knowledge, sometimes it's experience, sometimes it's skill, sometimes it's relationship. And you see all these different pieces. I don't know, it's just like gathering little bits from all the different parts of their lives. And you never know how that's going to play together. But I find that really fascinating to watch, or sometimes to listen to, right? If they were doing pretend play and that this dialogue would be happening in your thing. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. I think I know where that's coming from. Or sometimes you don't. And it's like, oh, that's interesting, you know, that they came up with that. But and relationship is a part of that, how they observe, how they experience the family relationship, but also how they're observing other relationships. I mean, I just have this image of kind of all these little pieces being collected. And then yeah, you really don't know how it's going to become integrated, I guess, in their play. Because for me, I think when we're talking about flow, especially for kids, but probably for any age, I mean, some of that could be interchangeable with the words play or work or create, right? It's kind of the zone they're in while they're doing those things. But I am curious. I don't know if either of you had anything else thinking about sort of this idea about conditions of play and kind of what we observe with our children, feel free to jump in. I had also had this thought about, I guess, kind of the idea of collective flow, like either on a societal level or even just groups of people. And the reason that came to my mind was just that I noticed sometimes, I guess, especially in these circles of kind of learning and de-schooling and reading about home education and self-directed education and all these different pieces, I feel like sometimes there are lots of people almost like working collectively together on this energy of finding things out. So whether it's, you know, books and podcasts or social media or online groups, or, you know, there are all these different kinds of outlets and ways of connecting with people. And it does feel sometimes like, even with virtual connections with people, that there's like this collective sense of flow. And I don't know if that resonates for anybody else, but it, you know, people will post things, you know, as I said, like an online group, it could be social media, it could be a blog post somebody writes. And it really does feel like there's this kind of like virtual energy that people are all kind of wanting to learn about similar things at the same time. I mean, I think this conversation would be an example of that, where you have more than one person, maybe not with like a conscious goal, but the idea is that you're, you know, you're kind of learning and growing about these kinds of topics. So I was just interested if anybody else has that experience, but I just kind of feel that sometimes when I'm reading and learning and talking to people.
Yeah, it's I think it's like linked to momentum, isn't it? I guess it's about that sense of I think when I was talking earlier about how the state of flow enables me to keep writing, because it builds that passion, I suppose, to come back to it. I don't, you know, I can't, there's a redeeming feature of it, even though it might be painful at times. And I guess that's building momentum, which I guess is what you're talking about, Erin. It's almost, I don't know why, but I had a kind of vision then of have you seen the film Finding Nemo, when the turtles are in the
Yeah,
I don't know why that vision just came to me as you were speaking, Erin, of kind of all these bits of information flowing about, you know, like bits and pieces about home education or bits and pieces about respecting children and stuff, all flowing along. And as people and every person that kind of contributes to that is increasing that flow and building that momentum, which is a beautiful thing to think about, isn't it? That it
becomes. Okay. I love that image, Haley. I couldn't, you know, it's like I knew the feeling, but I did not have a visual, and now I do. So thank you.
Yeah, we're just throwing something into that little flow, aren't we? Hopefully we're throwing something nice into it.
Mm. It makes me think how, I wonder if as young people, like as children, we're naturally kind of driven to do that and do that somewhat naturally. And then what it made me think of is, I wonder if like clubs came to mind, right? So like you see, our library puts clubs or tries to start clubs for all ages, like for children, like my son used to go to a Minecraft club. There's like Lego clubs, but there's clubs for all ages, for adults, for seniors. And I wonder if that's like the driving force behind those clubs, because we are driven as individuals to connect and, you know, we enjoy being in a state of flow on our own. I think most people would probably have that experience, but there is something about coming together in some way, whether it's a club or like virtually, or one-on-one, you know, maybe with your partner or your whoever, to connect with someone too. We don't want it to, I'm trying to think, it'd be interesting if there was an example someone had where they're like, nope, this is my thing that I'm always happy to do completely 100% on my own. I share it with no one. I don't know. But I think that to me, it seems like a natural thing. And then, and children, I think, have more time and space because they do it through their playtime. So whether that's a lot of playtime or a little bit of playtime. And then as life gets busier and we get this idea of like, what does it mean to be productive and how should we spend our time? Maybe we have less opportunity for that, depending on what it is. So maybe that's why things like clubs, or I'm trying to think what else would be similar to like a club. But that brings people together around, you know, and not that you always get into a state of flow, maybe every time you get into the club, but I wonder if that's partly the motivation behind clubs and things like that.
Yeah, I was thinking about things like choirs then when you were talking, Ashley, because when I was thinking about flow, about the times that I get into flow, one of the weird things popped into my mind was when I'm singing with my daughter. Now, I'm not a very good singer at all, but we... in the car, and you know, sometimes if we get to a place early, we'll carry on with our playlist that we were listening to on the way to somewhere, and then and we'll be singing, and you know, we've got a playlist that we listen to all the time, so we've got this thing, you know, we know lots of the words and we'll sing together. And I was kind of thinking, oh, I bet that's, you know, that I feel like we get into a little flow when we do that together. But it, you know, I've never been in a choir, but I wonder if you're in a choir, that sounds like the sort of thing that might happen, you know, there.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about, I hadn't thought about any of that, but you're right. I wonder if, like, I think those are both such interesting ideas, because it's kind of like, and maybe that's the way that our society figures out how to help people connect, because we are pretty, you know, individualized and compartmentalized. So it's kind of an opportunity to bring people together. And then I'm imagining that, you know, then you find kind of subgroups within that, that you might kind of get into a zone with and share some commonalities. So yeah, I find it so interesting. And I found it particularly interesting just because it's helped me. I think the idea of virtual connections has really helped me understand the virtual connections that my kids had, because they had more virtual connections than I did initially. And I didn't disrespect them, but I didn't really understand actually how kind of in sync you can become with people electronically. but there really is. I do think there's this building, and I can't remember which one of you said the word momentum, but yeah, it does feel like that to me. People are each adding their piece to things, almost like working together on a big puzzle that will probably never be fully solved. But there is that sense of like, oh, I have an idea, or I have a piece of information, and other people are grateful that that person added that piece in, and then build from it the way you might with a puzzle that, again, probably never gets finished, but it's still the fun of figuring things out together. So yeah. Anyway, yeah, that's just when I was kind of thinking the topic through, I thought, yeah, I feel like, at least for me, when I was reading about flow, it was always very individually focused. And I think it's fun to think about those possibilities, like either, as I said, groups of people, but at the family level as well, that you just, you feel that energy that's one person is building on another's. So
my daughter is, well, one of my daughters is a football coach, and another of my daughters is in one of her teams. And they're in a league, and they're quite new to the league, but the my eldest daughter is the coach. She one of the things she's having to deal with at the moment is trying to work out how to do substitutions so that they all get equal time on the playing field, but they've got more players than, you know, than can play at one time. And one interesting thing that's been happening with her team is that it's a girls' football team, and the girls have been, a couple of them have refused to come off the pitch when it's their turn to be subbed. And she, you know, I was kind of watching them thinking about how that as a team they get into flow, and they really, and it's good because it means that they're really enthusiastic and they want to, because at the beginning, some of them were a you know, obviously it's a new thing to do when you play a football match, and some of them were a bit nervous about it. Now, all of them, they just want to stay on the pitch the whole time, and that can't happen because obviously then some people will never get part of a game. But it's that thing about they are all, you know, they get into this kind of sync thing that the team, and then it is a bit jarring to have to come off and for somebody else to come on. So my daughter's thinking how, you know, what's the best thing to do? Do I let them, you know, do I bring them off for a short period and then they go back on more quickly, or do I bring them off for a longer period, then they're only off once, say, throughout the game? You know, how, it's just a thing that she's sort of learning at the moment, how to best to manage it. And, you know, whether there's a right answer or not, I don't know. But kind of, I was thinking about that team game aspect of how people get into a flow together there.
Well, and that's making me think a little bit about how as adults, we sometimes hear adults talk about the importance of teaching children teamwork. And it just as listening there, like they have different opportunities to work to yeah, like work on, you know, being part of a team and those skills that come along with that and just working well with others. But how different is it when it's around something that they are really interested in, passionate about, really enjoying? So, and if they get into that state of flow, those things could be happening as opposed to like, I'm just like a project at school, right? How many times we've maybe felt like we weren't good at working on it in a team group, like, or working in a group or on a team, because maybe it was just so challenging because it was, you know, something that wasn't meaningful to you at the time. So it just kind of made me think about how there are other ways and opportunities to be with others and work with others, but it would be amazing if it could always be around something. And sports is such a good example, but there would be many opportunities to do that. Like even a choir, right? People who are all interested. It doesn't mean that there wouldn't be challenges that you could work out, but there'd be more like purpose, I guess, behind working on those skills.
Well, and what it sounds like in a way, Haley, too, like your daughter is working with the idea of transitions, like transitioning. So almost like, how is she supporting her players in transitioning out of that kind of deep state of teamwork and collective energy to moving out of that again? And yeah, kind of toying with what works best, right? Again, as you said, there may not be a right answer to it, but so I think for me, I can think about how we can take that idea of transition as well and thinking about that for our kids and family members, as far as those moments where we do need to shift gears or we need to leave somewhere or something needs to be put away. Just those transitions out of something that's really, you know, there's just some really good energy with. So that's the word that came up for me, was that transition idea.
I remember when I started reading about respectful parenting, I remember reading about, supporting your children with transitions and that, you know, kind of, I don't know, growing some awareness of the fact that, you know, that it is hard, you know, when you try and stop it, you know, if you're doing something and you're really into it, then it is annoying. It is frustrating, isn't it, to have to switch gears and do something else. And the more I read about that and the more I've, you know, thought about my children and thought about myself, and I've realized that actually it's not just my children or just children that struggle with transitions, is it? I've realized that I struggle with transitions, definitely, and in some ways that stops you from getting into, or stops me from getting into flow, I think, sometimes, because there'll be things that I want to do or even things that I need to do, but I stop myself from doing them because I think, no, if I start doing that, I'll really get into it, and then I won't have the time to commit to it that I want to commit to it, and so then I don't do it, and it kind of then and that's really frustrating. Or you'll be in flow, won't you, and then something else needs to be done, or you get a phone call or somebody interrupts you or something happens and you have to switch gears. And so it's a very emotional thing, isn't it? I think flow is a beautiful thing, but I think it comes with lots of frustrations, and there are a few negative things about flow as well. I think the other day I had a piece of work for a client to do, and I had a deadline and I was doing it, and then I finished what I was doing, and then I walked out of the room that I was in, went into a different room, and suddenly looked around the house and thought, while my head was totally in flow trying to get this piece of work finished, my house seemed to have degenerated into total chaos. I kind of hadn't noticed, you know, like there was loads of washing up, and there was just the Christmas tree was being put up, and there were boxes everywhere, and just things had happened, and I hadn't noticed it because I was so much in flow. And then I looked about me, and I think that happens sometimes. Athletes, I think, who are training, I guess sometimes if you get into flow, you don't realize that you've got aches and pains, or you've injured yourself sometimes, do you, until you stop the practice that you were doing, the training or the game or whatever it was. And I think so sometimes flow, there are negative aspects to flow, I guess that's what I'm thinking of. That
because I keep going back to this idea when we were talking, Erin, I think it was you who brought up like flow, being in a state of flow and then needing rest as well, right? And kind of, and I've learned that more recently about myself in the last few years, like coming in and out of flow and needing rest in between, which has been really helpful in thinking of, because I think my one child actually needs a lot of rest, or more rest than my other child, or maybe I do. But I wrote down a note on it somewhere and I can't find it now, but oh, it was from my experience with being in a state of flow. Lots of times it can feel good and energize me and like have me in a good mood and put me in a great place, like this conversation would do. But there's definitely other times where it is almost a more negative experience. Not that there's not value in it still, but I can be in this state of flow and like by the end of it, I have a pounding headache. So it's not, which is, I don't know this. And it's kind of a new thing for me to recognize that. And it's been another thing that's been really helpful in thinking about how my children may feel after they've been in a state of flow. If I recognize that they are, they might feel really happy and good and energized, or they may need like some serious rest afterwards. So I haven't thought a lot about that yet, but it just made me think, Erin, when you were talking earlier too, about that rest, how sometimes a state of flow can be a type of rest. Like this is a type of rest for me. But there can be other, and like, I can imagine like writing, I know I've experienced it with writing, or it can be, whatever the activities are that I'm doing when I'm in that state of flow, but it leaves me feeling not always a headache, although that definitely happens, but it's just kind of had something negative attached to it. So I like keeping that in mind when I, excuse me, when I'm watching my own kids and supporting them throughout their days as well.
Well, and I wonder too, if there are different, like depending on people's personalities, because I think being a state of flow, there's a level of intensity to it, right? So depending on, so if I was kind of generating ideas on my own, or I was, kind of thinking about something or writing something, or I got into a flow of, baking something or something like that. Those sorts of things, I feel quite relaxed afterward. So if it's just something that I'm doing in a solitary way, but I'm really engaged in it, I think it has the effect for me of being quite relaxing. But if I'm having, like, I can think of some really great conversations I've had with like small groups of people or like meetings that I've been at, and it has felt so, like I'm going to use the word productive. I know we're not always looking for productivity, but in these cases, it's like, oh wow, there was some really good brainstorming, and it just felt like people were really in sync, and it's exciting. Like you leave thinking, wow, this was really, really great. And then I'm needing migraine medication like 20 minutes later. Right? And I think for me, that has to do with kind of an introverted extroverted piece. So I can do those things, and I can definitely enjoy the energy of that kind of group brainstorming or larger group environment. But I do have to think about what the impact is for me physically, because I do think that inadvertently I'm tensing my shoulders, and I'm, there are physical things happening, but as you mentioned, Haley, I'm so engaged in the conversation that I'm not noticing that I've been like hunching my shoulders for an hour and a half or, whatever. So just kind of having that awareness, I think that when I'm engaged at that level, I'm not always paying attention to my physical, whatever signs or things that might be popping up for me. So yeah. Is there anything else for anybody popping up? I think I'm sure I'll have a bunch of things, that'll start flowing for me afterward. But I feel like I've kind of said a fair bit. I don't know. How do you guys feel?
Yeah, no, I think we covered a lot. I don't think there's anything else. I think it was a really nice conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
And thank you, because I wasn't even sure what direction this would go in. So this was kind of interesting. Yeah, it was just kind of interesting to see all the different pieces that it hit. So yeah, thank you very much, and have a good rest of the day.
You too. Thank you, Erin. Bye, Haley. Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.